to see who's here. Why don't you tell me who's here?
Donna Lynn.
Sam, yeah.
Ritu.
Brent.
Ellie.
Diane.
Wendy.
And Joe.
Nice to see you all. Is the sound better?
So far,
we don't know yet.
We don't know yet. Well, Wendy and I were talking about this, and I was suggesting, or she was suggesting, that there be questions. If you can't hear me properly, if it doesn't come through, stop me, and I'll repeat whatever it is. I got an echo.
It sounds good to us.
Does it sound good to you? Well, that's okay then.
Yeah, it's better than last week.
Think it's this?
It's still a little chopped off. Can you step back from the camera?
I don't know. No. Oh, you mean the image ones.
Oh, it's just
good.
Yeah, that's a little better.
You look bright, Angie.
I'm just trying to figure out what's happening.
Nothing.
Okay. Right. Well, who would...
Well, chant? Should we chant?
Yes.
Okay.
An unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Would someone like to read chapter 23? Does anybody have questions about chapter 22?
Angie, have you been doing any of your handout preparation or?
No, I'm not.
Okay. I just didn't want to miss anything. If you were.
Oh, okay.
What are we on? 22? 23. 23. Purusha Morasabhuti, undifferentiated is this dharma in which nothing is differentiated. Thus it is called unexcelled perfect enlightenment. Without a self, without a being, without a life, without a soul, undifferentiated is this unexcelled, perfect enlightenment by means of which all auspicious dharmas are realized. And how so? Auspicious dharmas, Sabuti. Auspicious dharmas are spoken of by the Tathagata as no dharmas. Thus, they are called auspicious dharmas.
So the same paradoxical language goes all the way through this entire sutra. It is because it isn't. It talks about it, about the enlightenment, about the Tathagata, about all the many different things that are brought up. And yet, you can't say exactly any of these things because it's taken away as soon as it's said. So it's bypassing our conventional intellect. Our intellect likes to hold on to and name everything. In the very beginning, Buddha talks about the mind of a self, about being a self, of being a life, a soul. And said way in the beginning to Subhuti that as long as you're believing in a self and a soul and a being and a life, then you're not there. You're living in a dream still. Because what we can think is inaccurate. It's not there. It's already making a picture and a story. And so as soon as we conceive of some idea, if we hold on to it as if it were solid, we are putting ourselves in a dream state. So it's not that we throw anything away. It's not that we don't believe in ourselves. It's that we don't cling to any of it. That as soon as we say me or you, we're limiting our understanding and our felt knowledge of how things are. So Buddha is saying, is unexcelled perfect enlightenment realized without a self? And that's really the essence of this whole sutra, and really the essence of all Buddha's teaching, that this so-called self that we cling to and make real is only very momentarily real. It's not that we aren't here. It's that we don't, whatever we think we are doesn't stick. We are where we are. We are constantly changing. If we met somebody from our 4-year-old life, we would not recognize them and they wouldn't recognize us. Whatever we are is unpredictable and undiscernible except momentarily. And once that becomes understood, clearly understood, then suddenly there's a whole lot more room, a lot more light. We're not so limited. Each so-called being that we encounter, we don't have to knuckle them under into some particular identity. We don't have to collect all our ideas about somebody and paste that onto that person. If we don't think about itself or a soul when we meet someone, then we're open to see what's there. Without prejudgment. Without prejudice. So, this is sometimes called, with a pure mind, we cultivate what is auspicious. A pure mind meaning having dropped that notion of self, not being so limited by what we see and being willing to experience what we, where we are, rather than putting an idea on it first. To cultivate what is auspicious. And then this word is very strange. If you've read the Red Pine thing, it tells that auspicious, the real word, is kusala, which is the word for the grass that they sat on in lieu of zafu. They just bunched up kusala grasses and sat on it. It was a fragrant grass. And you could make it soft. And that became the place of prajna, the place of meditation where prajna rose. And in prajna, in the mind of Zazen, which is what prajna is, wisdom, in the mind of Zazen, then the unknown is encountered, not knowing. And prajna itself, says Red Pine, from prajna all the auspicious dharmas arise, the fruit of wisdom, which is the fruit of meditation. So auspicious usually means favorable or a good omen. But it means much more than that in here. Buddha says auspicious dharmas. Auspicious dharmas are the dharmas of true wisdom. Belly wisdom, you could say. Belly dharma. Belly truth. And this whole subject of enlightenment, which we're always so keen to understand, and that runs through our practice as a subject, becomes a goal, often even in spite of ourselves, or it becomes an idea that has already been accomplished. We have a certain experience and then we think that, oh, I'm enlightened now. Buddha said, undifferentiated is this dharma in which nothing is differentiated. Therefore, it's called unexcelled perfect enlightenment. So differentiation means putting a name on it, putting a thought on it, giving a standard and a measure. All the things that we do with our mind in order to understand. But that understanding isn't wisdom. Our wisdom is another level. A deeper level from that. And that deeper level has to see that if you call it enlightenment, it isn't. And if you think it's enlightenment, it's not. It just means letting it all go. And sitting upright on the grass and letting wisdom live in you. Enlightenment can't be realized, says Red Pine, because it has no features, no qualities, no aspects, nothing to pick out. If you pick it out and say, oh, it's gratitude I'm feeling, are all is one. I know it's all one. That's all very nice, but that's not it. As Dogen says in Fukanza Zengi, you could practice hard and think you've really got it. And that thinking you've got it means you're way outside. There's nothing bigger or better, no great soul. That enlightenment is called the great leveler. There's nothing to measure. Said if one dharma remains in the mind, feelings give birth to superior and inferior. When we cultivate with a pure mind, how could auspicious dharmas be exhausted? With a mind that's not measuring, then there's no exhausting of auspicious dharmas. Fusing's song is, water and land are the same true realm. Flying and walking alike are real. Distinctions of self and other be gone. Away with perceptions of better or worse. Once we know this equalizing nature, we enter nirvana together. And that's the point, together. That's what this is about, together. Says, because all objects of mind are neither high nor low, this is called the highest, most fulfilled, awakened mind. In our thoughts, the moon may be full or new, bright or dim, present or not present. I would say silver or bright orange. But the moon itself has none of these characteristics. The moon is just the moon. All objects of the mind are equal. So it's a mind thing. It's how we think. Wei Yang says, as for this Dharma of enlightenment, from Buddhas above, to insects below, they all possess a kind of wisdom that does not differ from that of the Buddha. Hence it is said to be equal and devoid of superior or inferior, for enlightenment is not partial. If you can just get free of the four perceptions, self, being, life, soul, and cultivate all auspicious dharmas, you will realize enlightenment. if you don't get free of the four perceptions, even though you cultivate all auspicious dharmas, your thoughts of a self or a being striving to realize liberation will increase instead. And this will never end. But once you get free of the four perceptions and cultivate all auspicious dharmas, liberation is within reach. Those who cultivate all auspicious dharmas have no impure attachment to any dharma. They aren't moved or swayed by any situation, nor do they desire, grasp, or love transcendent dharmas. Always and everywhere they practice expedient means that suit other beings and that are easily accepted. And they teach them true dharmas that lead them to realize enlightenment. Only this can be called cultivation, and this is what is meant by cultivating all auspicious dharmas. So, then the question is, what is an impure attachment? How do we recognize an impure attachment? And certainly we're giving lots of teachings about exactly that. It's basically about clinging, about holding fast when we need to let go, holding fast to our ideas, and forgetting that they're only ideas. Even the idea of ourself is just an idea. And the more caught we are by it, the more we cultivate it, the more trapped we become. We can enjoy ourselves. Enjoying ourselves means to open ourselves to others, to live our life together with everyone. That's cultivating dharmas. We practice not for ourself, but for the whole thing. And each individual, including the insects below and the Buddhas above. Our whole life is a practice together. So though this is a very short chapter, it's a really important one. It's getting to the nubbin, to the crux of what Buddha is trying to explain to Subhuti. Sheng Yi says, if what one practices is based on one's nature, one practices all auspicious dharmas. Because one does not depart from one's nature and grasp no form, such dharmas are said to be no dharmas. Because such formless, auspicious dharmas alone can adorn one's dharma body, they are also called auspicious dharmas. So we're left with what we've got. Completely. This is our practice. Based on our own nature, this is it. talk about, isn't it?
Practicing auspicious dharmas would involve being who we really are.
Say that again.
He said something. You just said something about authentic presence, about our authenticness. If we are who we really are, then is that cultivating auspicious dharma?
Yes. Yeah. And that's the purity. Our authenticity is our purity.
And that means not trying to be anybody or just to be who we are without a lot of manipulation.
Yes, nothing extra.
And you would know, right? You would know, it would be clear to oneself?
No.
No?
No.
Not that one would talk about it, but there's like this knowing inside without declaring it, just to oneself.
You would feel it.
Right.
Yeah. But if you began to talk to yourself about it, then it would turn into something else. Ron?
Well, you can turn it around. I mean, all these no dharmas are auspicious dharmas. So that means, you know, as soon as you start to say there is one,
yes,
then it's not there.
Yeah, you wash your mouth out with soap.
It made me think about the other phrase. Cultivating an empty field, you know, we were talking about cultivating, I don't remember where I picked that up. Somebody wrote a book or someone else said it.
Well, that, yes, that's the title of the book, I think. Yes. It's images help, but they're not it either, are they?
It's kind of signposts or ways that we might kind of get pointed in sort of a direction.
Yes, pointing.
Clear, there is no roadmap.
Exactly. Alas. Because we're already there.
Yeah. This is my own hang-up on the Diamond Sutra. A metaphor I use is the diamond cutter, you know, it's the diamond. They call it the Diamond Sutra, so I, you know, being the analytical type, I guess, or whatever, doesn't matter. What does a diamond cutter, or sometimes called a diamond cutter, so the image of a diamond, you know, it has all these facets, right? And if you just keep cutting them down, and they're smaller and smaller. And then they're really small. And then you cut them down some more, and then they're really, really infinitely small. And then you cut them down some more. At some point, they converge with something. Maybe no dharmas.
Electrons.
That's just something I...
Yeah. Over the years. It's true, that's just how everything is. We cut us all down, then we all turn into protons and muons and electrons and float off into space or down into the ground and turn into something else. Well, it's 8:00. So we'll meet again next Tuesday. Are there announcements, Wendy?
No, I don't have any announcements, but the sound was much improved. Thank you.
Oh, good.
And Tom.
It's all the headset.
Okay. Yeah. Sam, you have an announcement?
I would like to invite everybody for Christmas Day, if we don't have anything going on.
I can't believe you're announcing this again.
Why?
It's just, I can't believe it's been a year.
It's been a year. No, no lie. It's for real.
Days will all show
up. Yeah.
Get yourself together now, will you?
Thank you.
What are the hours, Sylvia?
9 o'clock till what is it? Christ grows up, Jesus. He's supposed to be a baby, right, on Christmas.
Oh.
So, so 9 o'clock till whenever.
Morning?
Yes.
Till whenever.
Like, you're sleeping back.
Thank you.
Well, I was going to put out a suggestion that we could have a New Year's Eve sit at my house, if you like, and we could sit till midnight, and if somebody rings a bell, we could sound it 108 times, and if you brought your sleeping bags, we could just fall down on the floor after that. So think about that. If that makes sense to you, maybe that's not a very finished idea, but it could be polished up a bit.
Very nice idea. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, dear ones. Be well. See you later.
Thank you.